My name is Salim. I'm an 8th grade science teacher. Welcome to School of Practice on Etchutopia Radio.
I was teaching how to count in binary numbers, and we were working examples together. And then I had two students who, they just acted so bored, and they piped up, and they said, "Okay, Miss Davis, we got this. It's easy. Can we move on?" So I looked at the other students and I said, "Do you have this?" And they were like, yeah, we've got this.
This is Vicki Davis. She teaches high school computer science. And she's talking about something that happened in class one day. It's what sold her on carving out time for formative assessments. Okay, back to Vicki.
So I wrote a problem on the board and I already had them logged into Socrative. And every single student typed in their answer into the problem. And I could immediately see their answers. And I was really, really shocked because the only two who knew how to do this were the two students who said, "Let's move on."
10 more minutes of reteaching and a few more practice problems did the trick for Vicki's students that day, and she was able to move on. But how many of us have been shocked when students struggled on a final project or failed a unit test after weeks of instruction? It's something veteran educator Jay McTighe has seen in more than a few classrooms, and that's why he urges teachers to check in with students regularly to see what they understand and where they need more support.
You don't want to wait till the end to find out, "Gosh, I didn't realize the kids never understood this concept or had this continued skill error."
Jay is a former K-12 teacher, an accomplished author and speaker, and an assessment expert. A few years ago, he wrote one of Edutopia's most popular articles about assessment ever. And now he's here to explain how to make the best use of formative assessments in your teaching. By the way, this is backed by research. One leading researcher, David Marzano, described formative assessment as potentially one of a classroom educator's most powerful tools to enhance student learning. The key, he adds, is how you use it. We'll get Jay's advice on how to choose the right techniques for your students and content, how often you should check for understanding, and whether you should grade formative assessments at all. Okay, let's get into it. I want to start by asking you to define formative assessment because these techniques can take many different forms in classrooms and there's some nuance to understand here.
Formative assessments are meant to inform teachers about how well their teaching is working, what kids are getting, where they might be getting stuck. But formative assessment can also provide feedback to learners, whether it's giving them feedback on draft writing or pushing them to explain their reasoning in mathematics because they've been incomplete.
And I want to make sure we clarify that this is an ongoing process, right?
Yes, it should be thought of as a formative assessment cycle of gathering information through assessment techniques, learning from that and acting on that information so that there is improvement both in teaching and learning.
So the cycle starts with gathering data on students' understanding, giving feedback to them, and then you're also adjusting your own teaching. And the cycle is continuous, right?
Well, learning is a process. And so we need feedback to help us know how learning is going, what adjustments are necessary. So good teachers are always assessing informally. When they ask a question and hear an answer, they're checking, does the kid get it? What reteaching might be needed?
Later on, we're going to talk about some specific examples of excellent formative assessment techniques that work across grade levels. But first, I want to focus on some best practices. Are there key points in the lesson when teachers should be thinking, time for a quick formative assessment?
When you're presenting new information to students, you ought to check at least periodically on how well that information is getting through, what they're getting from your teaching, what are the rough spots. You ought to do it, I would say, every other class period, at least.
And are there certain signs from students that you're like, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that, it's time for me to do a check-in?
Confused faces. When you ask a question, everybody's head's down, it might be a sign that they're not comfortable. Particularly if it's a skill-oriented class, you might see they're making a procedural error as they're working. So you might say, "Hey guys, let's stop. I want to do a quick check and correction right here."
So we're looking for nonverbal cues like furrowed brows, maybe zoning out, and then also clear errors or knowledge gaps in their work.
Yeah, and the formative assessment can confirm their puzzled looks are because they don't understand.
And Jay, how should teachers think about selecting the right formative assessments for their specific students? Do you have any examples you can share?
I'm going to think out loud on this. Who are your students? The age and the experience and the skill levels and all that, and the content you're teaching. I'll give you a quick example. Create an analogy to explain this concept or this process. That's a pretty sophisticated technique, one that I think would be most appropriate for middle school at least and above, high school and university level students.
So inviting students to transfer their knowledge from class onto other understandings they already have is a great formative assessment for older students, middle school and high school kids.
Correct. There's a cautionary note on this one, however. A student may understand a concept, but just not be able to create an apt analogy on demand. And that's why it's not an evaluative assessment, but it can be revealing. Now, let me give you one other one. A concept map is a particular kind of graphic organizer, and it's a hierarchical map. So it's well-suited for subjects like science or economics or history, where there are superordinate and then subordinate concepts. It's a great formative check kind of later on in a unit of study. I wouldn't do it right in the beginning, to see if kids understand the sort of the different levels of concepts and facts and their connections. Now, with younger kids, you could just say, make a map, just a visual map of what you've learned, and maybe point out connections.
Okay, so if you're working with older students, analogies are a great way to check for understanding. And if you're teaching science or social sciences, concept maps allow you to see if your students understand how different facts fit together. And that one can be adjusted to work for all ages. Now, earlier, Jay, you recommended that teachers do formative assessments at least every other class period. I want to share with you what one expert educator does. Her name is Elena Aguilar, and she recommends gathering data on students' understanding with every instructional activity. And she also plans ahead to make sure that she's varying her techniques for formative assessment.
I think that's terrific.
So here's my question. How much should teachers be switching up formative assessment techniques and modalities?
Learners have different preferences as to how they learn and different strengths. And so giving students an opportunity to do a written summary may be appropriate, but so might a visual. And some kids would be better able to show what they understand through the visual than the writing and vice versa.
After the break, we'll get Jay's advice on how to use some of his favorite formative assessment techniques and whether you should grade them or not. Plus, we'll learn about something I think of as Jay's VAGU rule and what it can teach us about how to give useful formative feedback to students. Okay, be right back. Hey everyone, we're working on an episode about grading, specifically 50% minimum grading policies, and we want to hear from you. If your school has tried a 50% minimum, what results did you see? What worked or didn't? Share your thoughts with us, and we may feature you on an upcoming episode. There are two ways to do it. One, call our hotline and leave us a voicemail. Our number is 866-333-4930. I'll say it again, 866-333-4930. Or you can record a voice memo on your phone and email it to us at podcasts@edutopia.org. Okay, let's get back to the show. Now, Jay, let's move on to talk more about the specific techniques and tools for formative assessment and talk about how to use them effectively with students. One of my favorites was getting kids to troubleshoot. Maybe you give them a math problem that's been solved incorrectly or an essay with a flawed claim, and you're looking to see if kids can identify the error and maybe even fix it.
Yes.
But probably one of the simplest ways to check for understanding is just a quick thumbs up or down or sideways mid-lesson. But Jay, here is my question. What if kids don't know what they don't know? Or maybe they have their thumbs up because they think it's going to be graded and they don't want to get a bad score.
You can check that by saying, and I would say it in advance, if you have your thumb up, I might call on you. And if I call on you, you have to explain it in your own words. You do that once or twice right in the beginning, the first time you use the technique, and they're likely to be more honest. But I'm also going to remind them that this is not going to be graded. I believe it's really important to explain to your kids why you're doing the things you're doing, what the goals are, what the purpose is, so they don't get freaked out. Their thumb is down, that might be a bad thing, or you might give them a bad grade.
Jay, another one of our contributors, Tyler Rablin, notes that the downside of hand signals is that it's difficult to support students who indicate that they need more help in the moment. But Tyler does suggest a possible solution. Here's a clip of Tyler explaining what he does with his high school students.
So I started actually just having students do another step after where they would try to pair up or get into small groups with someone who had the opposite response of them. So thumbs up would find a thumbs down would find thumbs up. The goal here is that if the student had their thumb down, they would have a chance to talk to students who had their thumbs up, ask a couple questions, look for clarification, and see if they can move forward with the learning before we resume the lesson.
I think that's brilliant. One of the things we know about learning is having to explain things in your own words or teach someone else is one of the best ways of internalizing. And so for the student who gets it, it's not a waste of their time. I think it enhances their learning, deepens their learning by having to explain it.
What I also like about that technique is it's a little more private, right? If you had your thumbs down, you don't have to ask your question in front of the whole class. You're working one-on-one with a peer.
That's right.
So if you're using hand signals in class, it's important to let kids know that you are not grading them, but you may need to find ways to ensure that their responses actually reflect their understanding. And if students need more help in the moment, pairing kids who've mastered a concept with kids who are still in the emerging stage is a fast, private option. Now, Jay, earlier, we were talking about concept maps. Let's talk more about using drawings or visual representations to get a window into what students are taking in. What should teachers be looking for when they review student drawings?
It all goes back to the goal, what you want them to learn, which would influence what you ask them to draw or visually represent. I have this from a teacher who gave it to me. One of the questions in the unit was, how is it that plants sometimes grow far from the mother plant? That's the concept. This was like second or maybe third grade. And the teacher started by asking students to draw a picture of any example that they knew where a plant might grow somewhere where it wasn't planted. And one little boy drew a picture of a squirrel carrying an acorn and burying it away from the oak tree. And then midway through the unit, they were asked to add to their drawing. The end of the unit, it wasn't an evaluative assessment, but it was a great summary. You know, get your picture back and add to it. And the picture has, you know, like seven different ways in which seeds are transported.
Okay, I love this, Jay, because what you're suggesting is using a tool that is perhaps used as a pre-assessment. Draw what you can tell us about why seeds would plant themselves far away from the parent plant. And so this gives teachers an idea of how much students know about this topic going into the lesson. But then to use that drawing again as a formative assessment and have the kids add on to that pre-assessment drawing as they learn more about the topic.
I'm glad you said that because it really parallels the learning process. And you can literally see learning manifested in the drawings. Plus, even if you have an evaluative assessment at the end, that's a great study guide that you prepared.
Now, Jay, I want to talk about digital tools for formative assessment. I know that there are endless amounts of apps and online tools and that they are constantly changing. But speaking more generally, what are the pros and cons of using digital tools to check for understanding with students?
I'll go back to my fundamental concept. Is the information you're getting through any tool or technique, digital or otherwise, informative? And is the app, does it reveal what you need to know about that content?
Let's stay with digital tools for one more question. We heard from Vicki Davis at the start of the episode. She was telling us how she learned about the importance of using formative assessments. Vicki is an educator in Edutopia's community, and she uses digital quizzes with her high school computer science students. The app puts our students into teams, and then the kids can see their scores on the board as they solve problems, like rockets racing each other, for example. Here's Vicky explaining how it works.
Usually, it only presents one question at a time, and if you have a score, it might show a score. But the team things are great because everybody contributes, and it's just a lot of fun. So I'll say, hey, we're going to have a practice quiz tomorrow to see if y'all are ready for the quiz. And it's a formative grade. Now, if all my students go and make 100, I'm going to write that down and move on and let that be my quiz grade. But if they made a 62%, I would never put that in my grade book, ever.
Jay, what do you think about Vicky's approach? She does grade these formative quizzes, but she does not record the grades if she knows that she still needs to reteach some concepts. So basically, she's shifting some of her formative assessments into summative grades.
Well, back to the description of the app and how she uses it. I love that. I can imagine that's very engaging, and having the game aspect of it will accelerate the interest, I would expect. But if the purpose is formative assessment, I don't believe a formative assessment should be graded, period.
What about the teachers in districts where they are required to record a certain number of formative grades every semester?
I'm not thrilled by that. I get the idea that if we want to encourage teachers to use formative assessments, we're going to have some requirement. But again, I think the fact that it has to be graded compromises the intent and the purpose. I'm an unapologetic advocate for not grading formative assessments.
Jay, I have one more question. We know that formative assessment is a process that involves not just gathering data on students' understanding, but then also using that information for instructional adjustments, whether through feedback to students or by modifying your teaching. But we haven't yet talked about feedback. Do you have advice for delivering formative feedback to students in a way that's effective for learning?
I do. My colleague Grant Wiggins, by the way, wrote a brilliant article called 7 Keys to Effective Feedback. I'll summarize in 4. To be effective, feedback needs to be specific. And specific is information about what you've done well and what your errors or weaknesses are. Mm-hmm. Secondly, feedback needs to be timely. Waiting 2 or 3 weeks to get feedback isn't helpful. The third, it has to be understandable to the learner. And I have a quick story on that. And fourth, it has to be actionable information. The student needs to understand what they have to do, or you have to help them.
Okay, so specific, timely,
understandable to the learner,
and actionable.
Right, those are key.
Excellent.
But here, I got to tell you the story because this is worthwhile. High school English teacher, she always says to her students, if there's something you don't understand that I'm writing or any feedback that you don't understand, come see me and I'll help you. So a student comes to her and said, there's something you've been writing on my paper. I just don't know what you mean. Vagu. She said, what? He says, you've been writing vagu. Look, 3 different places on my paper. Oh, she said, Thomas, the word is vague.
Oh, yeah.
She assumed he understood. It wasn't understandable, to at least to Thomas. So we got to be careful of vagu.
Here are the 3 things I'm taking away from this conversation. 1, formative assessment is an ongoing process of checking for students' understanding, giving feedback, and adjusting your teaching. Wash, rinse, and repeat. Jay recommends checking for understanding every time you teach something new, or approximately every other class. There's no fixed rule, and as with anything in your classroom, it's important to keep things sustainable. 2, make sure you're choosing techniques that work well for your students and your content. For example, a concept map might be a great way to check what students have learned at the end of a unit in a science class, because that content is based on hierarchy. And at the end of a unit, students are ready to make connections among concepts they've learned. For a language arts class, another check-in like a Socratic seminar might be a better fit. And 3, don't forget about the feedback part of the formative assessment cycle. That's the second step that helps students understand where they're at with their learning. And Jay suggested 4 rules to guide you when you're giving feedback to students. Be specific, be timely, be understandable to the learner, aka the VAGU rule, and be actionable. Special thanks to Jay McTighe. He's a former K-12 teacher and an expert in assessment. He's also a speaker and a prolific author. We'll link to Jay's excellent Edutopia article on formative assessment. We covered three of his strategies here, but there are five others that you should definitely check out. We also want to thank Vicki Davis and Tyler Rablin for sharing their formative assessment strategies. In addition to teaching computer science, Vicki is a technology coach. She also hosts her own podcast and a show for teachers that airs on radio and TV. And Tyler is a former high school ELA teacher who is now an instructional coach, consultant, and author. We love hearing from you. Send us your stories, ideas, and questions, and let us know what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. Our email is podcasts@edutopia.org. If you liked this episode, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and a review. That helps others find our show. This episode was produced by Ann Noisani and edited by me. Our engineer is Doug Keeley, and our supervising editors are Sarah Gonser and Steve Merrill. Special thanks to Yuki Terada. I'm Kristen Leong. We'll see you again soon.